Talk Shoe. Recorded live.
Hello, everyone. This is Wes from Geek Week over here at CIA. And actually, now I'm Wes from CIA, so this is CIA. Celestial Intervention Agency, not the Central Intelligence Agency. Although the two may be mutually exclusive or inclusive. Joining me today are Merlin. Say hello, Merlin. Or don't, that's up to you. And we have James from Doctor Who Podshock with us today. Very happy to have you here.
Good to be.
We have Diane, who was here last week. Hello.
Hello.
And who else we have in the room with us?
Like
is this Mike? Yes, no, maybe.
Nobody wants to talk.
We lost him. He was there, but then
he
wasn't. This is kind of like what I would like to call this, just because I'm a fan of the show, is Doctor Who Podshock, like, open forum. Although I'm not affiliated with them at all. This is kind of what it is. If you've been to the forums, it's a website, and people have discussions about all kinds of topics. We're not trying to talk about the same thing that was just talked about in any kind of Doctor Who Podshock episodes, because we've already talked about that. So now that I'm not sounding, now that I'm sounding really stupid, I'll move on to my question. The question to get us started today is, how did you get involved with Doctor Who? What was the, I guess, process by which you found out about the show? And we'll start with, ladies first. Okay, Diane, you go ahead.
God, I was afraid you were going to say that. Well, this is going to betray my age, but I actually first heard about Doctor Who in Starlog magazine, an article. And it sounded interesting, and I thought that it was being broadcast on a Canadian station near where I lived. I grew up in the Detroit area. And it was one of those things where you had to you know, stand on one leg and hold an arm in the air to get a decent picture. But I was finally able to catch an episode, and it was The Deadly Assassin. So my first doctor was Tom Baker. And shortly after that time, I had been reading Starlog magazine for a long while, and I was reading about Star Trek conventions and stuff like that, and I found out that there was a Doctor Who convention that was going to be in Tulsa. And it was the first Panopticon West that was held by NEDWAS. And being a little bit underage, I convinced my grandmother to accompany me on a bus trip. I agreed to go visit relatives in Houston if she went with me to Tulsa for this convention. And it ended up being the convention where Peter Davison was first introduced as the Doctor. So I was able to see the last Tom Baker episode, as well as the first glimpse we had of Peter Davison. Got to meet him, and it was really great.
Nice.
And then from there, I ended up forming a local club, which was the Motor City TARDIS. And that ran for quite a few years. We were a subgroup of the Companions of Doctor Who, which were based in New Orleans. So I ended up going to a number of the Panopticon Wests after that. And then after that, kind of personal things got in the way, and I fell away from the club, fell away from Doctor Who. You know, at that point, it wasn't on the air anymore, so we weren't getting new episodes. And I kind of got out of it until it started up again on the Sci-Fi Channel.
Have you found that since it started back up, your, like, fandom has become even more rabid than it was before you were when
oh,
you were
totally.
Younger?
Well, I was playing it cool because I had, you know, read different things. You know, read right away that, you know, the minute Christopher Eccleston's season started, he announced that he was leaving at the end of the season. So I didn't have my hopes up. And I watched the first couple episodes, and I'm like, yeah, this is cool, you know, but playing it cool, not getting involved, you know, protecting the heart, until Dalek. And after that episode, I was just blown away. And
right.
it all just comes rushing back. You know, everything from the old days. And in fact, when the season ended, it was, you know, the very last episode. I was just, oh my God, what do we do now? There's no more Doctor Who. We got to wait till the new stuff comes. And luckily, we've got the internet, and I went online. I found Podshock. I found a local Doctor Who group that's based in Orlando, because I'm living in Florida now, and just been getting involved and getting back into it. Yeah, watching the new episodes and really liking them.
All right. Well, thank you for that. We'll move on to James now. James, I guess you've been in the UK. You've probably heard about it your entire life, but how did you get started?
It's kind of a bit more complicated for me, I guess, than it is for you guys in the US, because being British, sort of, Doctor Who was always something that was part of UK culture, even when it was on its hiatus. But the first episode I ever watched was Curse of the Fenric, of course, the Seventh Doctor Sylvester McCoy story.
Shall we say we're sorry?
I don't understand it,
and I think you have to be sort of high to understand it.
That whole last season of McCoy's is kind of like that. But
yeah.
Sorry, James, go ahead.
It's one of my favorite episodes because it was technically the first one that I watched, and also I had to kind of watch it several times to kind of really understand it, and because I was so young and appreciate everything. But it is one of my favorite episodes, and I'm a big fan of Sylvester McCoy. I know he's not particularly popular with a lot of fans generally, but I like him. So technically, he's my first Doctor. But
all right.
Then, of course, the series was axed, and I started watching reruns on television very early in the morning, and then later on satellite, when we got satellite TV here, they showed a lot on UK TV Gold and other stations, and they were showing a lot of John Pertwee and a lot of Tom Baker. So I was watching those really a lot until the new series started up, which I was hugely excited about, because before then, I was just excited when they had a webcast coming out, like Shardar or Scream of Shalka. I was just ecstatic with those, and I thought they were terrific, and that was nice, even that they did those, and great and good fun. So when I heard that they were doing a new series, I was just over the moon, and when I heard they cast Christopher Eccleston, I thought it was scary, because I had thought about him as a possibility for the Doctor. And they just got so many things right. Every time that the snippet of information was released, like the Ninth Doctor in his costume, and the only thing that I was kind of skeptical about was the fact that Billie Piper was cast, because I had quite a few prejudices about her, because she'd been the pop star, basically the British version of Britney Spears, and it would be the equivalent of, like, Britney Spears being cast on Battlestar Galactica or something. You would,
right,
of course, just be shocked and sort of appalled, really. But I'm not one of these sorts of guys who really holds a grudge, and I was willing to give it a chance and see what happened, mainly because I was just so excited about it. Doctor Who was coming back to television, where it belongs. And so, really, Christopher Eccleston is up there for me as one of my favorite Doctors, if not my favorite Doctor, because it really breathed new life into the show, and I think they did a terrific job of bringing it to a whole new audience, which is something that isn't easy. I think not in this modern day and age with so many channels and so many popular shows, and to bring it back and then it to be one of the most popular shows on UK television is just astonishing to me. But that's really how I got into the show, and I think I have a lot of love for Sylvester McCoy and a lot of respect, but I think it wouldn't be the case if he wasn't my first Doctor, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But just because I have fond memories of sitting there in my pajamas and dressing gown after I'd had my bath on watching the show, so that was how I got into Doctor Who.
Awesome. Mike, you around?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right, your turn.
Well, the American story seems to be pretty consistent. Late 70s, PBS out of Dallas, KERA here. First one was Robot. I caught it from the beginning. Tom Baker was the first. Grown really to love Pertwee a lot better. It's hard to explain the exact reasons. Just the English gentleman, man of action, flamboyant wardrobe. It seems to work.
Right.
Roll the hit.
So that's how I moved into it and watched it up until it was on PBS even when I was in college here, because I was a preteen when it was first aired. Then kind of drifted away after they stopped airing it. But once it got back on, yeah, I'm getting into the books and getting into other stuff now again. It definitely grabs you again.
That is the truth. I guess it's my turn now. Oh, wait a minute. Looks like Mike Duran's on. Are you here?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right, your turn.
Yeah, I think my story, which I'd say it's a Canadian story, but specifically an Ontario story, because we never really had for 25 years, there was no consistent cross-country broadcaster. So it's sort of between the American and the British one. I don't remember there ever not being a Doctor Who. It started running on TV Ontario after I was born, but when I was very young. TVO is kind of a state broadcaster for the province of Ontario. And I recall seeing Doctor Who quite a bit as a little kid. Tom Baker, maybe John Pertwee, but never really, I never really watched it regularly, never really understood what it was about. I think when I was really little, they used to have a person on after Doctor Who that explained the episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Jim Dator.
Wow.
and Judith Merrill. And my vivid memories of Doctor Who sort of when I'm 6 years old are actually of Judith Merrill explaining the episode, not having watched the episode itself. so it's kind of funny. But then I had friends that watched Doctor Who at school, and pretty much everybody seemed to know what it was. And then when I was around 10 years old, I ended up with a friend who was really into Doctor Who, and he explained more about it to me. And I started watching regularly then, back in, in grade 5, and watched, and I'm still here. I mean, my interest hasn't waned really in the more than 20 years since, so. That's kind of how I got into it, and I was very early on, once I started watching, was exposed to all the fan clubs, and when I was 12, I got to go to my first Doctor Who convention, Diane mentioned Detroit and the Detroit Club. I remember meeting all sorts of people from Detroit back in those days at this convention where they had John Pertwee in Kitchener, Ontario, where I met some people from Detroit, and it was a lot of fun. We got a little taste of that sort of golden age of American fandom here in Canada as well, although not quite so many conventions. And watching Doctor Who on TV Ontario and on PBS, because eventually I ended up living in Quebec, and we got TV Ontario from across the border inside Canada, and we also got PBS from Watertown, New York. So I had Doctor Who on twice a week for years and years.
Nice.
I guess it's my turn now. I grew up right outside of Atlanta, and we have the Georgia Public Television down here, and I guess I was staying at my grandmother's one weekend, and they liked all the Lawrence Welk type shows that I mentioned earlier, and I remember they were going to bed, and they were doing a pledge drive, and the one thing I will remember about Doctor Who that just doesn't seem to click now is there's no pledge break, and I don't know why, but I have fond memories of the idiot guys trying to hawk all the Doctor Who memorabilia for $10. You can get the mug, you know. And it doesn't feel the same without that every once in a while, but I can survive that. But they showed the Five Doctors one night, and I was just flipping through. And I'm a huge sci-fi nut, had never heard of this show before, and I watched it and was hooked. And then they started like a month later with Robot, because they were testing out, and the phone lines were so jammed that they just decided to buy the show. And, I moved through them, and I think My first Doctor was Peter Davison. Well, actually, technically it was the Five Doctors, but Peter Davison was the main one. But and then it went right into Tom Baker, and of course he hooked me real fast. But my favorite Doctor, I think, right now at the moment, because it goes in phases. Sometimes I like one or the other. It's John Pertwee. I don't know what it is. There's so much happened to add to the canon that's still around now happened in his era. And then I've been asking this question of people around here because I just moved to Panama City recently and I'm just getting to know people. And I found a comic book store I'm happy with, and they are all huge Who fans. And the older gentleman that owns the thing was telling me an interesting story about Patrick Troughton. Now, he was running a comic booth at the convention where Patrick Troughton passed away. And the night before he died, he got his autograph at like 7 or 8 o'clock at night and then found out about what happened to him the next morning. And he showed me the newspaper where it was a big write-up in the Columbus, Georgia newspaper. And that was just an interesting story. But, I mean, it sounds like everyone has kind of the same story here.
And welcome in Dave Cooper. Hopefully we can get dialed in, and his story we want.
Yes, we definitely want to hear. He's having problems dialing in too. I don't know why. Hello, Dave. I don't know how to help you here. Maybe one of the other guys does.
Yeah, I'm trying to work with him here a little bit. Let's see if I can get him on chat.
All right, Mike, you go for it. all right, I guess the consensus is a lot of people started out with Tom Baker, didn't they?
Yes.
I think that is the case for the U.S., but I guess that's just because he was really sort of the longest-running Doctor.
Right.
And also the most, as a result of that, I guess, the most sort of stereotypical in a way. And there's a lot of feeling about Tom Baker because he was one of the Doctors that was the most memorable, I guess, because not just because of his costume and the ridiculously long scarf, but just because Tom Baker is just an insane fool. He's just completely enoughly mad. If you ever meet the guy, he is a wonderful chap, but completely, you know, stark raving mad. You know, and not afraid to show his insanity, which is kind of refreshing, I guess. So I'm surprised that a lot of Americans anyway that kind of make
We're getting a lot of feedback from somewhere here, guys.
I think it might have been Dave. I just paused him for a second. I'm going to let him back on and let's see what happens. Hold on.
See what goes on.
Hello, Dave. How are you?
Hey, Dave.
Huh?
Is there a Dalek on board?
We could sort of hear you. It sounds like it reminds me of in Star Trek II when the Kobayashi Maru is trying to talk to him at the beginning of the movie.
It's
a little bit better.
No.
Try a redial, Dave. Something's really wrong there, bud.
Okay.
Try one more time. We'll let you in. Alrighty. Well, just to throw this into a completely different tangent, because it didn't get brought up in Dr. Podtalk, and I thought it might, because everybody's talking about Paul McGann. What do you guys think about this rumor about their possible Paul McGann TV movie with him as the Doctor? And I'll just leave it open for whoever wants to start.
I'll say that I think that the same rumor in some variation about a movie gets trotted out every year around the time of Cannes.
Right.
For about 15 years. and it's Cannes on right now, and we've got rumors of a Doctor Who movie because of those rights that may or may not be out there somewhere that may or may not have delayed this new series from happening.
Right.
Yeah.
So I'm highly skeptical of it.
Well, someone in the Podshock podcast mentioned that, you know, if Paul McGann ever wanted to, you know, David Tennant ever wanted to take a couple weeks off, you know, wouldn't mind seeing Paul McGann. And I thought, well, they're doing the the Doctor Who Light episode every year now, you know, where he's not available for it, and they have to come up with another story. They could do a flashback episode, maybe slowly tell bits and pieces of what happened during the Time War, and have Paul McGann do it,
yeah.
Take over the...
Yeah.
All right. I think that... Sorry, my mind is blank. I was listening to the WhoCast, Paul and Seb, earlier this week, and they addressed it a little bit, and they were talking about how it was more like going to be a TV special, like a TV movie with him, and some listener had called in saying that they had seen an actual somewhat trailer for it at a movie theater in England somewhere, and they were trying to investigate that, but I think Seb can kind of talk to some of these actors because they're in their forum, so we'll, I guess, have to listen there a little bit. That's a little bit better.
A little better.
Yeah, a little better. I don't know, is it a problem with your mic, mate, rather than your connection?
Well, in a journey, I get the real voice and always say, welcome to Podshot Live. Right at the ball, which I don't understand. So I have a new contact called CRA, which I'm still using the same signal or whatever it is.
Yeah. Maybe you could try Skype. I don't know whether Skype would be better. Maybe
no
playing up.
I'll give that a go.
This is an idea.
I'll try that, man. Okay.
All right, mate. Speak to you in a bit.
All right. Okay. Jason, are you here?
Sorry, what, mate?
I'm sorry. I thought one of my other friends was here, but doesn't look like he is. Where were we? Oh, yeah, we were talking about the McGann possible movie. All right, let's just say, Diane, what are your thoughts on this if they do it? Do you think it's a good idea, or do you think it'll detract from the new series at all?
It depends on what the subject would be. You know, like I said, I know a lot of people are curious about the Time War and what happened, and if they did something that focused on that, I think it would be really welcome. So you could kind of see, you know, what happened during the lost years.
That's
here's
good.
A good title. Doctor Who, The Lost Years.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Work
the
for Star
age.
Trek.
For a book, at least.
Right. James, what do you think about that idea? Do you think it's a good idea to try to trot out somebody like that in an episode? Or?
I do. I think it's good to have an episode. I don't think it's good to have another movie. I really enjoyed the television movie, as you Americans like to call it. We just kind of refer to it as a movie here.
Right.
But I think it has to be done in the right sort of way, because with Paul McGann, there's obviously a lot of mixed feelings. I personally really like the guy. And a lot of people, I think particularly in America, treat him not really as canon or not really as the Doctor, just because it was one isolated incident. But I think that had more to do with the fact that the story was a bit rubbish rather than, you know, he was a bad Doctor. I thought he was a great Doctor.
Right.
I think they made a lot of silly decisions when they wrote the script for the movie, which didn't really make sense, and that fans, it didn't really appeal to fans, like the whole half-human thing and the kiss, which was quite controversial as far as I understand it in America, and all this sorts of stuff. So I think if they do it, it has to be done properly and in a tasteful way, and I really hope that it would be about the Time War, of course, because I think it's important. I'm sort of skeptical of all these trailers and things that have been mentioned, because I would have thought that somewhere on the net there would have been a version or something along those lines, and none has materialized. So I don't know. I'm skeptical whether it will happen, but if it does, I would be really glad to see it, and I'm sure that they have talked about it. The production team, they must have. If not explored it in the beginning when they were thinking about doing a new series, or they'll have certainly talked about it, because how can you not? I mean, they're all
right.
Doctor Who fans themselves, and it's something that I'm sure they would love to see, because people really seem to forget that the thing is that these are like, these guys are like us, really. They've grown up with Doctor Who. They love it as much as we do, and it's one of the only instances, really, other than, say, something like Star Trek, where the people who watched it and who were the fans now work on the show. And I think that's terrific, because it means that people are really enthusiastic about it and genuinely want it to succeed, rather than it just being their job, because they have a lot of passion in their work. And sometimes things will come along that are controversial that people won't like, but that's part of Doctor Who. It's an innovative program, and you know, that's how it advances, by being different and doing crazy things and people disliking it. And you know, that's part of what makes the show a success. So yeah, I would definitely like to see them do something with Paul. I think it would be really unique and an interesting opportunity, and but I wouldn't want them to do a whole series, I don't think. I don't know whether Paul McGann would like that, but personally, I think that if they do it, it should just be restricted to a couple of episodes, or episodes that are drawn out over several series to kind of hint back to the Time War as like a flashback or something. Not go into it too much, because then I think people will get kind of annoyed, I guess, or it'll be really controversial, and you don't want that.
It could be kind of confusing in some aspects if you have one Doctor on all the time and then suddenly another series with a different complete actor is on. You know, the people that aren't canonized, I guess, to the series wouldn't necessarily understand what's going on.
Yeah, true.
But you're right. It would need to be done during the run of the series as a flashback. That'd be great.
Yeah.
I think Gant has a chance to do his thing a little bit. He's excellent in audio, and I can only imagine what it'd be like actually in a full-blown episode.
Yeah, it would be a lot of fun.
Welcome back, Dave.
Thanks, guys. I still want to hear that welcome to Podshot when I join you. Is the sound any better?
You're better, yeah.
Yeah, we can hear you
yeah,
now.
Yeah, I understand you.
Yeah.
Welcome to the room.
Thanks.
I guess you say room, but... all right, well, we'll go back to our original question for Dave now that he's here. How did you get involved with Doctor Who? And this should be an interesting story.
Well, you've got an old fella here. I was at a club in 1963, is it? Going back all that time. And looking forward with my friend, we're playing snooker, waiting for the night that was going to be the start of Doctor Who. And then the tragic event that happened in the USA, the assassination of your president. Absolutely stunned. I mean, the whole world turned upside down. Even in England, I mean, I just don't know what the shock wave that went through the USA was. It must have been just... The nearest thing that's happened in this country was when Lady Di died. But basically, that was what happened. I was only, 17 or so. And of course, part of me was thinking, well, they've dropped Doctor Who. It's not going to be on 22nd of November. And they postponed it for another day. So that was my first experience of Doctor Who. Not Doctor Who at all. It was the assassination. And... The whole thing clouded everything for weeks and weeks and weeks. The world was a very uncertain place. Nobody was really sure what was happening, and it's amazing that Doctor Who is still here after such a tragic start as that. But if I can try and lighten the mood a little and go on to it, yes, it was the unearthly child and the very first Doctor. And frighteningly, I've read since and heard that the Doctor, the actor himself, was only 57 at the time of portraying the first Doctor with his granddaughter.
And here's me now, a ghastly old man, out in the office as soon as I say this. I mean, I'm 60. You know, an old duffer in England. And there was he at 57 with silver grey hair slicked back, looking to me very much an old man. But the story was marvellous. I mean, the impact when the first the two teachers from the school follow Susan into the yard, and the immortal words when they go inside and they find the TARDIS thing on the inside. I mean, that was a fabulous thing when it first happened. If any of you people have actually managed to see The Unearthly Child, I think it came out in the more recent box set, the beginning set. It doesn't really look that promising as a series, and I believe it was only actually scheduled for something like a 6-week run. But it was absolutely amazing. There was a lot of historic things that followed. I'm a little bit bleary on this. I think it went to a caveman story the second time, and it was something to do with discovering fire. And then it was the third story that went to the Daleks. And all you actually saw at the very end of the first appearance of the Daleks was the teacher, not Susan, good God, my brain. The teacher, Barbara, putting her arms up against the wall and the Dalek going towards her. And from that moment on, well, the success of Doctor Who was assured, I think. If the second part of the question was, who's my favourite Doctor? That's a toss-up between John Pertwee and Tom Baker. It would be, actually, John Pertwee if he hadn't have been kept to Earth, because, of course, all you long-standing fans of Doctor Who and the listeners will know that he was marooned on Earth, as it was. And so the episodes, to my mind, the same cry that Lewis has had on the Gallifreyan Forum, you know, let's get off Earth, let's see other races. So that was a little bit one of the things that limited it for me. But yes, I love it. And one of my favourite early stories was Carnival of Monsters. The idea that this machine could carry people in miniature and the story keep repeating in history. The people on the ship with the young doctor that we meet. I thought that was a fabulous one, fabulous story. So I've talked long enough for an introduction. Let me hand it back to everybody else and I'll chip in where I think I can.
All right. Thank you, Dave, very much.
Yeah, cheers.
One thing I'm curious about from Dave, is it perhaps the fact of that assassination that may have moved it to the public wanting some form of escapism to retreat into that might have attributed to some of the success? Could that have helped it along?
Well, that's certainly possible, but I mean, it would have been so easy to be overlooked because in this country, the BBC, one of the things that they do have, because they don't have to answer to advertisers, if a story comes along, they can give it blanket coverage. And so with an event like that, basically, the schedules went out the window. Schedules, sorry. They went out the window. And you know, it really, it could have got completely lost in all the commotion that went alongside that. I mean, James is on the forum. I mean, God, he's a young boy, so he wouldn't probably know what it was like. But he will surely back me up on the point that the BBC could do that. They didn't have to answer to advertisers. And
yeah, exactly.
The story went on.
Even when 9/11 happened, they basically covered it for hours and hours. Just, I mean, I think every network did, but the BBC certainly was what everyone had tuned into because, of course, they, as you're quite right, they're not impeded by having to advertise. So it was complete blanket coverage, and that's how it's always been whenever anything major has happened.
Well, they've done that here, too.
Yeah, especially on 9/11. It was blanket coverage across everything.
Yeah. But I mean, just to kind of illustrate, I'm trying to say that that's how, I guess that was maybe the first instance on, from the American side of things, certainly that has been the case, but that's kind of like it, how it always is here when there is, when something really major happens, even if it's overseas or whatever, then they can, they have the option to do that, of course. So I can completely empathize with what they are saying, is that I think there's been really sort of two pivotal moments in Doctor Who. The first one being, of course, that it could have been overshadowed by the assassination of JFK.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second really important thing as well was, of course, I think, the arrival of the second Doctor.
Yeah, because
true.
That was a turning point, really, in that if Patrick Troughton hadn't have been such a terrific Doctor, there would be no more Doctor Who. That was a real turning point in the series and something which was very, very important. And it could have changed the whole face of the series. So in that aspect, yeah, I can completely empathize with what they're saying.
And of course, the second Doctor had one of the best storylines of the lot, I think, the War Games.
I hope that one comes out on DVD sometime soon. That's like one of the best episodes of the series, period, I think.
Yeah, it was absolutely excellent. And the whole idea of different moving from different time zones within the one story. But of course, I've watched it again recently, and one of the things is the actual people that are running this. Everything is telegraphed. You don't have to almost guess who's the baddie in these things. I mean, everything's signaled so clearly for the viewer. But of course, those were less sophisticated times. I mean, in this country, there are only, what, three or four channels on the air. The audiences, certainly for some of the major programs, were up to maybe 20 million, which basically means everybody was in the house, especially in the winter. And that, of course, is one of the things that I'm sure people will discuss here from time to time. Why on earth they're putting out Doctor Who in the spring and the early summer? Because traditionally it was always something that people gathered around. Young lads, they'd have their bath. I think James has mentioned this before. They'd have their bath, and the young boys would be in the gym jams, sitting on the sofa with their parents, or maybe behind it. And that was, their treat for a Saturday night before they went off to bed.
Yeah, and I do remember that because it was on, being in the winter and being quite, it was very dark outside at like 7 o'clock. So you did feel tired, and it was the last thing that I used to do before I went to bed, watch Doctor Who, and then go up to bed and have nightmares about Daleks. So
it's never been the same since, eh, James?
One regret I have about being a kid and a fan of Doctor Who was that they just didn't jump on the action figure bandwagon soon enough.
Well, that is true, but it's not the case anymore. I mean, on the Podshot forums, I don't know if and if you guys are the same, but there's a lot of collectors of this stuff, particularly Sean Hutcher and Paris, and they're having difficulty keeping up with it all because so much stuff is just coming out all the time, and it's all a bit crazy, really. I mean, I'm having difficulty keeping up with the books, and usually the books are something that I really enjoy and relish, and they seem to be coming out with titles all the time, and I can't keep up with it all.
All right. I mean, they have the face of Bo now. How could you not want that?
Yeah, that's really cool.
Just waiting for the left knee of Bo.
Really cool.
Get the left knee of Bo attacks.
Yeah.
You bet he's dead.
I wouldn't mind having a life-sized one.
I am
awesome.
After last night's episode, I am eagerly anticipating a Scarecrow figure, however.
Yeah, it's pretty much a dead set, isn't it?
I'm thinking that would be a really cool Halloween costume.
Yeah, and easy to make, probably. What about a human Dalek?
No, let's not talk about that.
The man-like.
Let's not.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Oh, man. I mean, I'm just saying it. I think probably the coolest collectible that I have personally gotten has got to be the Sonic Screwdriver.
Yeah, very applicable and something that everybody can have without feeling too geeky, I think.
Right, because it's a pen. You can justify it. Hey, I'm writing things with it.
Yeah. But
and it's like a mini flashlight.
Well,
yeah.
Yeah,
of course.
Yeah,
if you get the new one, it now comes with psychic paper, which I don't know why they didn't do that to begin with, but...
Yeah, that seems to be an obvious thing to do. But I think I might get the new one because it seems to be really cool. And the one thing I didn't like about the old one was the fact that the thing on it wasn't too bright, the light on it wasn't too bright. But I guess that's part of it being the whole UV thing.
Right. They've apparently redesigned it, and it's supposed to look a lot more like the one on the series now. Of course, the story I heard was they kept, in Eccleston seasons, they kept breaking it, and now they actually use the toy.
Yeah, they modeled it on the toy. They were so impressed with how well the toy turned out. They took a mold of it, and now the new Sonic Screwdriver is based on that mold that they took of the toy. So, but yeah, because it did apparently break all the time and was useless. So, not the first time the Sonic Screwdriver's broken.
Probably won't be the last season.
Yeah. Someone is asking how much is it? I think it cost me about a tenner, I guess. That's going to be a hard time when I bought it. But it's a while ago now, I can't remember.
If you're in the United States, you can go to whona.com and get it for $12.95.
Okay, so there you go.
Thanks.
Not expensive.
It's pretty inexpensive, actually. For that kind of toy, it's pretty inexpensive, and I was impressed and snatched one up as soon as I could.
Yeah, but I think it's about... I think I paid no more than a tenner for it, probably including shipping, because I bought it off Amazon.co.uk. I know it's definitely there. It's not an expensive thing, which is one of the reasons why I also didn't feel too bad about getting it, because, you know...
It wasn't that
really cool thing to have.
If it had been like $50, yeah, it would have been a little bit too much for me, I think. But
yeah, exactly, because they have that with phases and stuff for Star Trek, don't they? You can buy these replica ones that they're really
yeah, they're
expensive.
In the hundreds.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I'm saving up for the radio-controlled Dalek.
Yeah, I bought my mate one of those for Christmas a couple of years ago. They're really good fun.
James, I was going to say... It's about time that we in the UK got things a bit cheaper because at the moment the pound to the dollar is about 2-1. But even with things like iPods or all sorts of things, I mean high-definition DVD players, in America I hear they're only about $600 or something, which means they should be on sale in this country for $300. But they're not. They're items of pounds, which is equivalent to $600.
I don't know why. It's completely daft. I mean, everything. Because I've spent half my life on the continent at the moment and just working out how things are in pounds, and you're like, that's really cheap. So I don't know why it is that we pay so much.
I wonder how many of those toys are made in China. Doctor Who's
voice. Yeah, exactly.
I recognize that voice. That's my friend Jason. Hey, Jason. How are you doing?
Good. How about you?
Pretty good. Now... Jason in this forum is, I guess, what we would call a hoobie.
A hoobie, like a who newbie.
Yeah,
right.
He just started watching it with the new series, so he hasn't really been shown a lot of the old stuff. I saw a little bit as a kid, but I didn't totally understand it when I was younger at the time. So my brother watched it more than I did. My older brother did more than I did at the time, so I didn't really understand it. But yeah, the new series kind of got me interested more into the old stuff now.
But what part of the new series are you watching, mate? Has it been 1, 2, or 3?
I'm sorry?
What part of the new series are you watching? Did you pick it up on sci-fi?
I watched series 1, 2. I watched all of them from the since Eccleston started.
I started with
Eccleston.
Right.
He's been taking that late night Concorde trip to England on the weekends.
Exactly, yeah. Well, I was wondering that. I didn't know whether you got him into it that way, because it's quite unusual to find people who've just got into it this series and wanting to talk about it on the podcast anyway.
And I did see recently, I did buy a copy of the McGann movie too. So, I mean, yeah. I kind of remember it back when it first came out, but I don't remember it too well, and then I bought it. So, you know, at least I have bought a few DVDs of all the Doctors at least. And I just started watching the first Doctor stuff recently too.
As I say, it was an exciting development. I don't know whether you've talked about it in this particular broadcast, but how the Eighth Doctor made his first appearance in this week's episode in the journal and so on. It certainly looks as though they might be able to integrate the Eighth Doctor into the current series, and that would be great.
Yeah,
we talked about it a little bit earlier, yeah.
That Dave actually put on the podcast forum, the Eighth Doctor's picture is the most prominent one. It's the biggest of all of them.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder if they would have to make him wear a wig or something. I mean, I don't know how much older he's gotten since that movie, but I wonder if he had to wear a wig or something. Or if
he did. He did. When
he's got about 11 years older, I think.
Yeah. But, you know, that makes me wonder,
He's also got the son, of course.
Sorry?
A new son, yeah.
He's got a son. In one of the audio things he did, his son played, and is it the Folders one? His son plays it, so he's, you know, if it's 5-10 years down the road, his son could play his character as a younger version.
Okay. Interesting.
Actually, one of his younger brothers looks a lot like him too, but I don't know what his voice sounds like.
That's true. They're an acting dynasty as well, aren't they? Like the Red Graves and
the
Barrymores. That's it. Well, I like the old chap in the Barrymores with the funny fingers. Great. John Barrymore is it the oldest one?
Okay, I'm going to throw a question out there for James. All right, this is something that's been eating at me since I started listening to Doctor Who podcast. It's not just eating at me; it's just a curiosity. How did you get involved with Lewis and Ken?
I was doing way back in 2005 my own podcast,
okay,
which is something that I haven't really picked up on or done in a long time because, well, now to be honest, all of my podcasting time is pretty much taken up with Podshock.
Yes, I used to be a subscriber to that one actually. So.
Yeah, I know. I've been trying to pick it up again, but things have been kind of crazy with my degree and I don't know. I never had a huge listenership. Well, certainly not along the same lines as Podshock. And as Lewis will testify, it's a really time-consuming thing to get into. But I was doing that, and obviously being a Doctor Who fan, I did a podcast about Doctor Who and how I was so excited about the new series coming back. And then I kind of did a bit of a review of the Rose when it first came out as well. And Lewis heard it because he was subscribed to my podcast. And in February of 2005... I think I got an email from him saying, you know, I'm thinking about getting together and doing a Doctor Who podcast. Would you like to contribute? And so I emailed him back saying, yeah, of course, I'd love to, thinking that it would never happen and it was just a bit of a pipe dream. But then Lewis sadly got caught bronchitis, which put him out of action for a while. So I was really surprised when he sent me an email later on in like August and said, okay, we're good to go, let's start recording. So he would have been, I think, the first, if we'd have started recording when we would have originally planned in like February, we would have been the first Doctor Who podcast. Now that goes to, I always get confused now because there are so many out there. Podcast 2.
It was Tom Dillahunt, wasn't it?
Yeah. But I wanted to get the name of the podcast right now that there's so many out there. But yeah, that's how we kind of got into it. But it's funny because I never thought that it was going to happen because of Lewis's sort of hiatus and getting back to me. because he was so ill. So, but here we are, sort of nearly 2 years later now, and yeah, it's all a bit mad, really. I never would have believed you that we would have become so well known and
going so strong, well, partnering with Outpost Gallifrey and so forth.
Yeah, exactly.
You're going to start getting convention requests pretty soon if you haven't already.
Yeah. No, but
we're seeing you at Collectorama now, one of these things where you sign your name.
What, sorry, Dave? I didn't hear that.
You'll be at one of these Collectorama type places where people are going to have their names, their photos taken and signed. You never know.
Oh, I don't know about that.
One day at the cavern, Colin Baker might be interviewing you.
I doubt it, mate. That would be insane. So we talked a bit at the beginning about, I think it was Merlin or West who said that I was a celebrity, and I really am not. It's scary when people come and talk to me and tell me such things. And I've been at the old convention every now and then. But I don't know. I'm hoping to go to Gallifrey this coming year in February.
But didn't they blow that up?
Sorry?
But didn't they blow that up?
Blow that up? Yeah, they did. Well, I guess the doctor did as well. But I meant the OG convention. I think Lewis and Ken are probably thinking about going as well. We've kind of mentioned it briefly on the podcast and sort of said that it will happen. I don't know whether it will. I hope it will. I'd really like to go. I've never been to an OG convention before. And we'd probably do a recording there, I think, which would be a lot of fun. Go on, pray, mate.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. I'm actually trying to get some information on going to Dragon Con this year, meeting their podcast track. They started a whole lot of podcasting stuff last year.
Mm-hmm.
And I had just gotten started, but I'm hoping maybe we could do one of these live broadcasts from there as well. Dragon Con's like one of the biggest sci-fi fantasy conventions on the East Coast.
Yeah, and it's in Atlanta, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's gotten huge over the last couple of years, and this year they've added a couple of interesting guests. They're getting kind of away from the sci-fi fantasy and just having, I guess you would say, just media guests there. Because, you know, last year they had Mickey Rooney, and I don't remember any sci-fi movies with Mickey Rooney in them.
Nor do I.
Yeah, the fantasy side, I guess, would have been
Pete's Dragon?
I don't know.
Yeah. Well, you know, he once dated Judy Garland. I guess that's kind of out there. But
did he do any Twilight Zone or anything like that?
I don't think so, really. But, you know.
There was a weird film he was in when he played the mayor or something when he was about 85. I can't remember the name of the film.
That's right. He might have done something, but I think he was there because the Children's Miracle Network telethon was that weekend, and he hosts that now, or has something to do with it. But they had it
maybe
sitting next
to the comic book once, and that's why he's there at the convention.
Well,
he was in Night at the Museum.
They had him sitting right next to George A. Romero, so that was kind of an interesting portion of sitting next to. You get Romero, the king of the zombies, next to, you know, one of the greatest icons of movie history, I suppose. Interesting. Anyway, I digress. But original thing I was saying was I would like to, you know, maybe we'll have a live, I guess, podcast episode from there, because they're going to have it set up, I think, where the different podcasters out there can create episodes with the live audience, kind of like you guys did at Icon.
Yeah.
And I could just imagine me sitting there with a bunch of little speakers with name cards in the front, kind of like Charlie's Angels. Everybody's asking questions to the little speakers.
Yeah. But I've always wanted to go to Dragon Con. My ex-girlfriend was from Georgia, so I used to go out there a lot, and I've been to Atlanta several times. So I don't know. Maybe I might be there. I don't know. When is Dragon Con? It's usually in the summer, right? Like in
it is
August?
September. Usually Labor Day weekend, somewhere around Labor Day, which is the last weekend in August. isn't it?
Okay,
like,
I thought it was August.
Yeah, the first weekend of September.
No, I think Labor Day is the first Monday in... Yeah, it's August 31st to September 3rd. It's the first Monday in September.
Right, so it's that weekend. And this year's going to be even bigger. They've added some pretty big media stores this time at the last minute so far. But
yeah, I'm checking out the guests. A lot of cool people.
Maybe you can take a holiday. You can be taking holidays from England to Atlanta, Georgia or something.
Well, I think that the 31st is actually the last day that I work at the current company where I'm working in the Netherlands. So I have to move all my gear home. That won't be fun.
Well, I'll definitely have at least an on-site report or something going on. Last year, I tried to record some interviews while I was waiting in line the 3.5 hours for my one-day ticket, but that didn't work out so well. I met a lot of neat people and took some great photographs. But if anybody's out there listening, and I'm talking to you people that are down the road downloading us, you know, months from now, if you've never been to one of those conventions, you should go. It's kind of an interesting thing to see once. I wouldn't necessarily dress up as your favorite character in fantasy the first time you go, but you'll see some interesting costumes, that's for sure.
Yeah, people put a lot of effort in, don't they?
But people know how to make really good costumes on their own, unless they get it professionally done elsewhere.
Well, you haven't seen anything if you've been standing on Peachtree Street and see legions upon legions upon legions of stormtroopers marching down the street.
That would be amazing.
It's very surreal.
I think as well, with you Americans, because you have this tradition in Halloween of dressing up, it probably comes easy to you. I know, James, I suppose it's a bit stereotypical of me to say it, but we are a bit more reserved here in the UK, and anybody over the age of 12 tends not to dress up. Where in America, grown men, all age groups seem to enjoy Halloween and the dressing up, and not just in the horror costumes. The dress up seem to me as fairies, tomatoes, virtually anything you can think of.
Yeah, it doesn't really seem to be anything to do with being scary, which I thought was the whole point of Halloween, but people tend to dress up as anything.
Mm-hmm. Well, it got commercialized and all the mask companies got involved, and you know, it's kind of like Christmas nowadays. Christmas is all about, you know, the holiday more than what it was originally created for, so
no.
All about the buck.
Sure.
And on that note, you can send your checks to us at... No, I'm just kidding.
Tying in Mickey Rooney with the McGann movie. The Mickey Rooney, that great sci-fi icon, has as much to do with it as the Daleks do is Law and Justice, you know, executing the master. It makes no sense.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's true. Okay. I guess that's a good way of saying we got off track really bad just then.
Apparently, when the Queen was over in the United States just recently, Mickey Rooney was one of the people introduced to the Queen. So I should imagine Russell T. Davis is already on the phone to him by now. You might be asking Doctor Who.
Well, I was reading, I guess it might have been in a Doctor Who magazine recently, because I finally got him to get me a subscription to it at the local comic book store. And they were talking about how there was some kind of garden thing going on in England somewhere the Queen was attending, and they had a display with a TARDIS in it. And it was like...
Yeah, the
kind of
flash, London.
And they heard her saying something like, why is there a TARDIS there? So it's like, is the Queen a fan too?
Yes.
Yeah, she knew what it was, certainly.
Yeah. But I think that in the UK anyway, if you showed someone a Dalek or a TARDIS, they would know what it was. I think they would recognize it more as a TARDIS than they would a police box.
Right. Well, isn't it true that the BBC owns the likeness rights to the police box and the police department doesn't?
Yeah, that's quite right, yeah. Now, anyway, wasn't always the case. But obviously they don't really use police boxes anymore. So the BBC have got the rights, but you still find them on street corners every once in a while when you're on your travels. There's one pretty close to me in near Weatherby, but I think it's funny certainly that the cops have it over that the BBC has it over the cops, but I think that if you were to show a TARDIS or a Dalek to somebody in America, I guess most people wouldn't really know what it was. They might now that the Sci-Fi channel has started picking up the series, but it's not really as embedded in culture. I think it's more of a cult thing, right, in America, more than anything else. It's certainly not nowhere near as big as BSG or any other sci-fi show you could think of.
Yes,
well, you know, go ahead.
I was saying, in this country, you can hardly watch one of these housing programs, you know, where they're showing people are buying houses, where there isn't at least one reference to the TARDIS. When you know, they see a little, what we would call a townhouse, which means compact and bijou is estate agents. Sorry, realtors. That's the word. Where they go in, it's a small room. They open up, and they show it's TARDIS-like inside. That happens week in, week out in this country. But of course, we haven't got houses. I mean, the last house I lived in, I think it was something like 800 square feet. Where I watched some of these American programs, and if a house is less than 3,000 square feet, it's probably considered compact.
Oh, that's not quite true.
Is it not? Oh,
depends on where you
live. No,
right,
3,000 square feet is pretty big for a house. The one I'm living in now is 1,600.
Right.
Well, that's at least twice an average British house, I would think. Easily.
Yeah, I think my house is pretty small. I don't even know if it's 800 square feet, let alone.
That's counting the garage as well.
Judging by last week's show, it seems that somehow or another our shows keep ending up on real estate.
Well, the population per square mile over there is like, you know, living in New York, so that's why the houses have to be smaller. So.
Right.
Yeah.
It depends on the area and how many people are there. I mean, I live in a 1,600 square foot house, but I also share it with three other people. So.
You know, going back to talking about how you could show a picture of the TARDIS or a Dalek to someone and they might know what it is. Well, I've got one of those Dalek banks on my desk at work, and my boss is like, "What's that?" I'm like, "Oh, it's like this tank-like creature that's very feared, you know, on this show." And he goes, "Why am I supposed to be afraid of something that has a toilet plunger attached to it?" I'm like, "That's not a plunger. it's like an arm."
I bet when his back was turned, you made Dalek exterminate to him, didn't you? When the boss wasn't looking. No?
Or he could have pointed out how it can't get upstairs, and therefore no problem.
Yeah. Well, everyone, we've hit an hour. So I would like to say thank you all for being here.
Yeah, we've kind of been on a rambling but isn't that always the case with, well, it's always the case with Podshock. I can't speak about other podcasts, but.
Well, I mean, we're trying to actually keep it unstructured because it leads to interesting conversation sometimes. But like on a show like yours, you kind of have to keep it structured because there's so much you're trying to fit in there at one time. We're just talking about whatever happens to be out there at the time, so
it's a nice idea, mate, to do. Thanks for setting it up. It's a great little community we've got going on here.
Yep, and it's growing.
We appreciate y'all for being here, and I hope you all will come back next week. We seem to have we had a good discussion today. We had a good one last week. We're going to have a better one next week. Not that this one was bad.
I'll certainly try my best, but if it's not next week, then the week after.
That'll be awesome. Thank you for being here, James. Thank you, Dave.
Okay.
Diane and Mike and Jason. Thanks.
Cheers, guys. Well, have a good one, and I'll hopefully speak to you soon.
All right.
Thank you, James, very much. And Dave.
And thank you, dear listener, as Russell D. Davies always says. Goodbye.
Bye.
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 Bye.